Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
What a day. What a day we have just had. Hardly any of the big names have lost, but we have just had epic upon epic here at the Australian Open on day four. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I would say today is the day that the men's tournament caught fire.
Yeah, with a breathless night session with three matches all going to five sets and having to dash between them and trying to get them all keeping your attention. It was what Grand Slam's all about, really. Not too much like the other day, just enough.
But Matt kind of did like a physical Manic Monday. He, rather than just trying to look at five screens, he physically raced, sprinted between courts in order to try to capture the climaxes of all of them.
Yes, because Catherine and I were over on the Melbourne Arena watching Kyrgios, which is in a completely different postcode.
It's basically a different universe.
Yeah. It is miles away.
You walk through a sort of weird wonderland to get there, which is, it's like a sort of food village, which is themed by the four Grand Slams. So you literally walk through France, Great Britain, Australia and America to get to the Melbourne Arena. And by the time you arrive, you feel like you're sort of in the afterlife.
And it ceases to be a tennis complex. Like, you don't see any tennis courts on your walk.
On the plus side, apparently it's only $20 to get in and five for kids.
Oh, it's awesome.
Awesome. Once you're there.
Yeah, it's worth the trip.
Do you know, I've been coming here 16 years. I don't think I've ever set foot in there.
I remember you saying that last year when Murray was over there. He said, I've never been there.
That's true. I have never been there. That and the French Open.
It's got its own media centre.
Has it?
Because I think...
Because
it's so far away, it's like... It's not really doable if you're covering a match over there to sort of base yourself here.
Right.
But we're in the main media centre, which is sort of right by Rod Laver Arena. I mean, if you're covering Melbourne Arena, you've got to commit to being at the Melbourne Arena.
Yeah.
And your day revolves around the Melbourne Arena. Unless you're Speedy Gonzalez Matt.
Yeah. So what was it like in there, Atmos wise?
Midway through the fourth set, so it was two just sublime sets from Nick Kyrgios, and then he was a break up in the third against Gilles Simon, and it all looked to be going pretty swimmingly, and then he had a pretty major blip, ended up losing the third, and it being taken to a fourth, and it felt on the edge throughout the fourth. He eventually broke in the latter stages and took it, I think, 7-5, 6-4, 7-5, 7-5,
I think.
And Matt and I commented to one another midway through the fourth that the atmosphere was good, but your expectations of a Kyrgios match on Melbourne Arena, that it's going to be completely spine-tinglingly electric.
I think they were exhausted.
It wasn't quite that. And I also think they were saving it, because for the last two games, the Seymour service game where Kyrgios broke and then Kyrgios serving it out, it was off the scale. It was mind-blowing, special, really memorable. But, yeah, it was almost like they were all keeping something in reserve because they knew what it could be.
Kyrgios matches are tiring to watch, aren't they? I mean, they can... I think my sense watching on TV, and I only watched on TV because obviously I've never been to Melbourne and I never will. But my sense was that the first two sets were just a massive celebration because he was clued in. You know, he was there was not a flicker of lack of focus. He was bouncy and, you know, I always say he looks like a freshly hatched chick when he's like that. He looks like he's just got so much energy and he's gamboling around and playing silly shots and making me laugh. It's when he makes me just laugh with a shot.
Yeah, David doing half an hour, well, every half an hour you were doing
an update for the BBC Radio listeners.
Exactly, yeah. And in between you were watching Kyrgios on the screen, and obviously people, not me, because I'm just doing the podcast, but there are other people doing serious radio jobs around us. And, you know, you have to be quite quiet in that room because there's lots of people talking. And then every 5 minutes or so, you just hear David burst out laughing because Kyrgios has hit a fake forehand drop shot drive. It's just great.
He broke Simon dismissively in the first game. And then in the second game, Kyrgios is serving, and I think one of the opening points of the game, Kyrgios just beats Simon with a drop shot that Simon, who's got great, great legs on him, even at, what is he, 34? Didn't even run for it. And then in the next point, Kyrgios did a drop shot fake. He went faked to hit a drop shot and bunted it down the line. This is like the sixth point of the match or something. McEnroe just goes in commentary for Channel 9. He goes, "Oh, for Simon, that's like having your pants pulled down." And it really was. It was like just an utter humiliation in the second game of the match.
And
it
yet they sort of seemed to bond as the match went on.
Oh, yeah,
two.
Over their trolling of Nadal.
What happened?
Well, Kyrgios got a time violation warning, which
mid-service motion, which he'd already begun his motion,
really bizarre because he is rapid,
yeah,
and it's amazing how quickly his mind goes to Nadal in almost every situation. He immediately just started imitating Nadal, you know, putting his hair behind his ears and crucially
pulled out his wedgie
and the umpire laughed, to be fair to him. And then a bit later, a few games later, Simon was being slow and then did the exact same thing, started mocking Nadal as well, and Kyrgios just burst out laughing. They were bonding.
It was great, and Kyrgios was obviously trying to be baited in the press conference afterwards to trash Nadal in some way. And he wasn't rising to it. The first time he was asked about it, he just gave a big grin. He said, "I know what you want. I'm not going there." And then the second time he was asked about it, they tried a slightly different approach. They said, "Who do you think did Rafa better today, you or Simon?" He said, "I don't know. I don't wear underwear, though, so..." Yeah, it was a real bombshell.
It was an exclusive, not the one they were looking
yeah.
for.
Yeah, there were a few exclusives, actually. Reem... A colleague of ours, she asked him about this being Carlos Suarez Navarro's last year on tour. She actually lost today, didn't she? To Swiatek. Early adopter Matt is nodding along. So that would have been her last Australian Open match today. And she said, "Oh, Carlos Suarez Navarro, it's her last year on tour. Last opportunity for you to play mixed doubles with her. I know you're a fan. Would you like to make that happen?" He said, "Yeah, I've already asked her 3 or 4 times and she keeps saying no."
I mean, I can understand why she's saying no.
Why?
That feels like a circus that Carlos Suarez Navarro has never intended to get involved in her career.
It's not really
her,
is it?
She hasn't shown any inclination to get involved in circuses.
No.
Amanda Anisimova, though, very much committed to the circus.
Okay.
Kyrgios will be playing mixed with her tomorrow. He says he's been excited about it for 2 months.
Bless.
Yeah. Not about the singles, specifically about the mixed doubles.
That's quite cool.
I don't know what you... I completely agree with what you were saying about Kyrgios matches being exhausting.
Well, this is what happened. It was party time. For an hour and a half, it was party time in there. The crowd were having the best time.
And you're just on such an emotional high with it.
Suddenly this cloud starts to descend on Kyrgios when he's two sets up, he's 4-2 up. There's a 9-minute game where it looks like he's about to go double break up. And he has a 31 straight rally, and he's almost trying to beat Simon at his own game.
And then
he stops beating him in his own game, and Simon starts to play really, really well, and Kyrgios loses that game, and then completely falls away, and the crowd, you could hear a pin drop, and you could sense the tension in the room. It was just awkward. Everything suddenly felt really awkward, and everybody looked like, oh dear, I'm a bit knackered now.
Yeah, it goes from massive emotional high to really quite depressing very quickly. Yeah.
He wanted to show Simon that he could win his way as well.
Yes.
He wanted to pull his pants down even further.
He was doing it, and
he was doing it, but he couldn't keep it up.
Couldn't keep it up.
But that's the thing. Yeah. You know, can he sustain it for three straight sets?
It's interesting how candid he was. I thought about how he'd have seen the match if it went to five. He was pretty honest in the on-court interview with Jim Courier and in press conference. He basically said, "I'd have been in trouble physically if it went to five." And that was my feeling sitting there, that my biggest concern for Kyrgios is his body. I think he has to be winning these matches in straight sets. I mean, I think he can afford the odd four-setter. I mean, he's been dealt a little bit of luck in that Karen Khachanov, his next opponent, has just completed his own absolute marathon. So
10-8 in the fifth.
Might be depleted himself, but it's an advantage to any opponent he has. I think that they feel like, if I can just drag this out, if I can just hang in there and make it physical, he's going to struggle.
Yeah, Mikhail Imer, who was serving for the match against Khachanov at 6-5 in the fifth, went to the tiebreak. And on match point, Khachanov collapsed to the ground in celebration and then started to cramp and couldn't get back up.
Yeah. And Imer was a little bit annoyed with him, I think, because he'd done this nice gesture of kind of going over the other side of the net waiting for him, and Khachanov couldn't get up. So he was waiting to shake his handshake for about 30 seconds.
Yeah, he'd sort of deferred his desolation for a few moments
exactly.
In order to be the bigger man.
Yeah, and give him that moment.
Because he served for the match, didn't he, at 6-5 in the fifth.
And he was ahead in the tiebreak as well. I think he got to 8-6, Imer, and then lost the last 4 points.
That's right. He played well though, didn't he?
He did, and he's exciting to watch because he's a nice blend of pretty solid and consistent and secure from the baseline. You're not worried that he's going to miss all the time, which... I don't like watching players like that. It makes me anxious when they're just expecting a mistake. And yet he's got all the athleticism and the speed around the court that makes him genuinely exciting as well.
Yeah.
So hopefully he can, you know, push on from here because he's starting to get into these slams and have some results. And obviously Khachanov working with Frederik Rosengren, who was sitting on the side,
he wanted to spend more time with his family.
Come out of retirement, and he's now watching fifth set tiebreaks at almost midnight.
In that bit of the draw as well, it could well be Nadal meeting the winner of those two in the fourth round. Nadal tonight beat Federico Delbonis in a match closer than they've ever had before, because previously Delbonis had barely been winning one or two games a set in the six sets they'd played previously. He got him to a tiebreak today. I think Delbonis was great. He was really played well in that second set. But Nadal was not that convincing tonight.
1-for-18 on break points, I believe, which is,
is that right?
Federer-esque.
That is Federer-esque.
Delbonis...
Has Federer always not been very good at
He's really low ranked. He's really low ranked in break point conversion.
Yeah, I mean, the margin of that stat is so small. It's like Nadal, I think, is something like number two all time with roughly, this won't be quite correct, but it's roughly something like 44%. And Federer is something like 93, 94 all time, 42% or something. So it's a small margin. But it always seems noticeable with Federer in big matches. You just think back to the Tsitsipas one here last year where he fluffed all those break points and ATP finals and multiple finals against Djokovic and Nadal. It's more or less in line with his returning stats. Nadal's returning stats are pretty much the best of all time, along with Djokovic, and Federer is lower down, so he's going to take few of his break points.
Talking about players that makes you anxious to watch, Dabonis's service motion makes me anxious.
That ball toss goes into orbit.
Yeah,
well, it goes into orbit, and he's throwing his arms out wide like he's sort of just landed a jump in ice skating. Is that accurate?
It's not what that looks like.
No, okay. Well, that's what it looks like. I've got an expert in figure skating here. But that's what I think of anyway.
It looks mechanically unsound.
Right. Okay. It looks like I would look if I landed.
I mean, obviously, if somebody said to me, you can swap your own serve for Federico Delbonis's serve, I'm biting your hand off. But in the realm of, you know, top level service motions, it gives me the heebie-jeebies. Mm.
And we had, I'll tell you what gave me the heebie-jeebies, was when Nadal hit a forehand return late but clean, and it went off at a 45-degree angle and hit the ball kid on the side of the head right next to the umpire's chair. And, I mean, for a second, you know, it was just panic stations because he couldn't have hit it harder or cleaner, miscued it, and it hit a smack in the side of the head. And she just barely blinked, just took it, and Nadal set off towards her like he was chasing down a drop shot on match point in the Wimbledon final. I mean, he went straight up to her just to check on her and look after her a little bit. And I mean, it was a nice moment, but it was a really scary moment. And I did kind of feel like maybe they should have just taken her straight off the court, but she was not having any of it. She was just like, right, let me do my job, will you, Rafa? Can I just, you know, get on with it? Or
let me provide some excellent fodder for an awkward post-match interview moment.
Yes, inevitably. So Nadal's through.
He plays Pablo Carreño Busta next, which, bless him, can we just skip over that?
you're not expecting a tight one.
So we've got Pablo Carreño Busta.
Good player.
But it's just an awful matchup. Yeah.
And an exhausted Karen Khachanov standing in the way of Nadal Kyrgios.
Who's going to blow it?
Well, it was Khachanov who beat Kyrgios in that really uncomfortable match, wasn't it?
Yeah. In Cincinnati.
It's interesting, he gave, just final point on Kyrgios, he was giving his box a lot of jip tonight, and he completely fronted up about that in press. He said, I'm embarrassed about the way I behave towards my box. He was asked about, you know, is this your... I do feel for him, because the quality of questions that he gets... It's really pretty tabloid, you know. You can see he's being baited. I can see why he gets frustrated. It's fault on both sides, but I do have sympathy with his frustrations in press conferences, you know. And he was asked, "Is this a sign of a corner turned, Nick? Are you ready to win a slam?" You can just feel him going, oh,
"I've just won the second round."
He said,
mate.
"I'm in the third round, mate. I'm in the third round." And he's trying not to get annoyed. He said, "I'm in the third round. All I'm doing is trying to be better each day. For my next match, that means being better towards my box."
Right.
But my personal theory on it, and he said absolutely nothing to back this up, but this is my psychoanalysis of Kyrgios. I think that what he would be, what if he weren't on probation, or if he hadn't turned this corner that the Australian press thinks he's turned, would be perhaps directing towards the umpire or the opponent, or more negatively, he's channeling that towards his box, because he knows he can go in there and see them and they'll get it and understand and forgive him.
And also, I don't think anyone should be making any kind of big deal about Kyrgios having some kind of blow up on court today, because he didn't really. He pretty much kept it together. He did have a bit of a rant towards his box, but you could have written that transcript and it could have been Nick Kyrgios or it could have been Andy Murray saying those things.
Just anxiety,
he said,
wasn't it?
I could have gone to a really dark place in the fourth set and I didn't, and I'm proud of that.
And in a way, that's even more impressive than if he'd just completely blown Simon off the court in three straight sets.
Can you tell that we're back on the bandwagon?
Yeah, Curie optimism levels are off the scale.
It's only 18 minutes worth.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. The other five setters that were going on at this point, Stan Wawrinka ended up in an epic with Andreas Seppi.
One of the many watched on by Matt.
Mm. I don't think I've ever seen Andreas Seppi play live before. And my word, he hits a sweet ball. It's not even like he's putting any effort into it, and it pings off his strings. Whereas you think of Wawrinka as hitting a really clean ball, and he does. But I was more struck by just the timing that Seppi's got.
Well, Stan is, it's a bludgeon,
it
isn't
is,
it?
Yeah, whereas Seppi just sort of caresses it over the net. But Wawrinka was a breakdown in that fifth set and really had to wrestle it from Seppi. At one point, he had a single-handed backhand drive volley.
On his way to interview room two.
Karen Khachanov, so just put him back together. And he's on his way to interview room two, folks.
Yeah, a single-handed backhand drive volley winner from Wawrinka. I think it was to hold serve, and then he did that thing of pointing to his head and the crowd were lifted. Yeah, he wasn't wholly convincing, but it was he did well to win that match.
Do you remember when Seppi beat Roger Federer here?
Mm, 5 years ago.
I'd completely forgotten about that.
Yeah. That was one of a rare Federer day session match, and I don't think he particularly enjoyed those hot conditions.
That must be... I believe that was the third round.
It was, yeah.
That he
it
hasn't was, lost in a before the
no,
because fourth the round since then.
The second night. Round was the match where he was stung by the bee.
Crikey.
Against Bellelli.
What? I mean, what sort of stat is that?
Well, it came up in the bee sting episode.
The bee sting episode.
Did it?
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
It was my finest moment.
We've had a lot of podcasts since then. Anyway, we were mentioning the five-set epics. There was also the Taylor Fritz comeback from two sets to love down against Kevin Anderson, who I've just seen walking down the corridor past me. I mean...
Broken man.
He was moving slower than I did. I mean, I felt for him. I mean, if you remember, when we were going back to the city in Fed Square, and it was 1:20 in the morning, and Kevin Anderson was still playing the other night, and here he is in another five-set epic. I mean, he's just coming off an injury as well.
Mm.
I mean, but at the same time, Taylor Fritz, I don't know the full details of the match, etc., but I know that he won a really tight match in the Davis Cup, and his captain Marty Fish was really chuffed about it. It didn't even mean anything. It was like a dead rubber, I think. But he beat Berrettini,
yeah.
And he just felt like that's a really big moment for him, just to come back from an impossible position and win. Just showed his heart, and here he was again. He's a proper competitor, he is.
It does always feel like a watershed, a player coming back from two sets down for the first time. I mean, some players never do it.
James Blake waited virtually his whole career, and then I think he did one right at the end of his career.
I mean, he did ruin it all with his celebration.
Did he? What did he do?
Well, you've seen it.
Oh, the one where he pulls his shorts up.
Pulls his shorts. I don't want to.
Media announcement.
Thank you, announcement, for getting me off the hook.
Yeah, all right. If you haven't seen it, go and have a look. Taylor Fritz. So, what else has happened today?
Well, there was another. When all these men's epics were going on, there was a epic between Collins and Putintseva.
I don't want to talk about that one.
Oh, yes.
Should we just wrap up the men's stuff?
Okay.
While we give David a moment to adjust to what has been a truly tragic day for his predictions. R.I.P. David's hopes of being a champion ever again.
I mean, my title defence is an utter humiliation.
Good job. Dominic, you got two trophies.
Dominic T.
I'll ration them over the next 10 years.
Dominic Thiem got taken to five sets unexpectedly.
Yes, this was a worrying development, given my.
Is it the worst collective hair that has ever been seen on a tennis court?
I thought they looked quite cool. Alex Bolt and Dominic Thiem, both with the old frosted tips. I'm thinking of getting the same.
Talk us through the tennis, Matt.
The hair was bad. The tennis was good. Thiem was cruising. 6-3, 5-2, or 6-2, 5-3, I think. And then suddenly, he started missing, started spraying balls, and he allowed Alex Bolt to get inspired and use the crowd on Melbourne Arena. And suddenly, Alex Bolt was, in your words, David, playing like Henri Lecomte. The way
at his best.
Yeah, the way he hits the ball so flat, left-handed.
Media announcement. Federico Del Bonis is on his way to interview room 3.
Oh, higher than I thought it was going to be.
The sound of a stampede. I do feel bad about that.
So you should. It's disgraceful. He played bloody well, he did. I tell you what, I'm out.
Right,
I'm going to go and talk to him.
Then.
See you later. Bye-bye.
Where was I? Alex Bolt. Yes. He likes coming forward and he's got a big lefty serve and Thiem was struggling. But what he did say was that he knew that Alex Bolt had played five sets in the first round and doubles and that he could take him physically. And as soon as he got to a fourth set, Bolt kind of collapsed, to be honest. And Thiem was then able to come through sets 4 and 5 very straightforwardly.
It feels like the only person that didn't get taken to five sets today was Alexander Zverev.
What's plot twist.
What's happened in the world?
What is this universe?
Yeah, and he didn't hit a double fault.
Yeah,
no.
That really is weird.
Three sets, zero double faults.
Is this it? Has he turned the corner?
No.
We're going to look really silly if this is it.
It'd be great if it was it, though, wouldn't it? Because he'd donate all that money to the bushfires. He'd donate winner's check.
Yeah. I still don't think he played particularly well from the bits I saw. It was a lot of grinding baseline rallies.
Who's he got now?
Verdasco. Speaking of predictions.
Verdasco's beaten him before.
At the French Open.
Yeah.
First round of the French a couple of years ago.
Mm.
Let's be honest, is a chuff draw.
Although I must say, I picked smug prediction-based statement alert. I picked Verdasco to beat Basilashvili, and he did. However, I wouldn't have picked him had I known that he's got heavy strapping on both knees and kind of going up his thigh as well. I'm not sure he's
it's like a sort of
particularly
garter.
Fit.
It's like pantyhose strapping.
It's very punching the air as we speak at the prospect. Okay. So, yeah, well done, Zverev. And, yeah, I better touch on the old Collins issue. She was in my semi-finals, and she played Putintseva. And don't start giving me stick. Putintseva, she beat 6-1 2 weeks ago. And then today, they get embroiled in the epic of all epics. And I, to the point where I actually turned on the screen in front of me because I was so on edge about it. Even though I was commentating on another match. I was still being professional. I was just sort of watching out the corner of my eye, and, you know. And yes, Collins saved a match point, broke back, and my heart sang. And then she got broken again and lost. So and Putintseva did some of her muscle bicep flexing when she won.
Should we talk about Bencic and Ostapenko? Should we just rip off all the plasters while we're on
predictions?
Oh yeah, I in our daily predictions, which we do for the newsletter, I'm 0-4 at the moment because I said Ostapenko would beat Bencic.
Do you know after 7 points how many challenges remaining Ostapenko had in that match? One.
7 points. Matt Stat. By the way, we do Matt Stat in the newsletter. You've just been given an extra one.
Yeah, she wasted two challenges straight away.
Brilliant. What else?
Bad day for British women.
Heather Watson got beaten heavily, 6-3-6 love by Elise Mertens, who she beat last week in 3 hours 33 minutes. But you know, it was clearly a different couple of players today. Harriet Dart played well. She lost 6-2 6-4. She had a lot of breakback points at the end to try to get it back on serve and level. And I just thought she came out and she really played her game. It was just clear. The movement of Simona Halep really becomes apparent in a match like that, where the other player is hitting the ball probably better than she is, or in terms of aggression, but you just can't get it past her enough.
Yeah, and Dart did well because there's so much scar tissue for her going onto that court with having lost six love on it last year, and immediately she went down a break. And I mean, certainly I was thinking, okay, how many games is she going to lose in a row? And, you know, it would be understandable if her mind went there as well. So, yeah, she put up a good fight, but second year in a row, no Brits in round three at the Australian Open.
Yeah, not great.
Okay. There's a few of the doubles players left. Jamie Murray, Neil Skupski, Joe Salisbury, I think, are still in the doubles. But, British singles players have gone. What else have you seen today, folks?
Muguruza beat Tomljanovic.
Good match.
She was good, but I don't see her as a contender for these titles.
But I think she needs to just work her way back. She was asked about being back with Conchita Martinez as though it was some kind of magic combination. You know, just back with her, and immediately she'd start winning again. And she said, no, it's just not like that. I've got to put in the work. I've fallen so far. You know, I was looking up her year-end ranking. I think she finished something like 3-7-2 in the world. And then last year she finished 36. You know, so it was a massive fall, and there was a sort of mini fall just before that as well. So the last 2 years she's really been nowhere near where she can be. And I think she understands that it's not just going to click back, because there are better players than her on the tour at the moment, and she's lost so much that she needs building blocks like this. She needs a good win against an informed player like Tomljanovic just to get back a little bit more confidence. And if she can keep building, I feel like maybe by Wimbledon or the French Open she might be more where she wants to be. But I don't see her as a contender at this tournament.
Pliskova looks like a contender, do you think?
It's the one flipping slam where I haven't gone for Pliskova to do things.
Now that she's got past Mladenovic in the first round, and she won comfortably today against Laura Sigmund.
She did. I mean, it was an indoor match, which is obviously just ideal for her.
Although a style of play that she doesn't really like. She said in her on-court interview that Sigmund's game is really ugly to me.
I do love how blunt
so
she
great.
Is. She's fantastic.
We mentioned Świątek, didn't we? Yeah. Little smug smile for Matt. Kiki Bertens won. She's in your quarterfinal lineup.
It's my semi-final lineup.
Semi-final lineup, crikey. I just wanted to... A Kerber won as well. Nobody's talking about her to do anything, but she's still in the tournament. Cece Bellis won today.
She's had a terrible time, hasn't she?
Had a terrible time. She, if people are thinking, oh, I know that name, she's only 20 years old, but she announced, I mean, she was a world number one junior. She announced herself on the senior stage, 15 years old, 2014 US Open, where she beat Sybil Kova,
mm-hmm.
which is, I mean, obviously in light of Coco Gauff now, that feels like small fry, but it was massive.
And it was her first tour level match, and she won it. And I think Sybil Kova was in the top 15 at the time.
Yeah, and she backed it up with other victories. And we're talking about somebody that was a contemporary of Andreescu and Ostapenko, and was
beating
these players when they were on the junior and ITF circuit together. And she's had an absolutely horrible time with injuries, mostly to her racket arm, wrist, forearm. And she was actually told in October just gone by one doctor, luckily she sought second opinions, but she was told she'd never play tennis again in October. And here she is. She says she feels like a completely different person now. I don't think she's been given any guarantees about her body, but she says, I'm pain-free and I'm approaching things in a completely different way. And it's just a really uplifting story.
Yeah.
She entered this year's Australian Open with 5 Grand Slam main draw wins and 4 surgeries.
Oh my goodness.
You know, at 20.
At 20 years old, she you know, almost had as many surgeries as match wins at Grand Slams, which is just mind-boggling. And I think it was a case of one of the surgeries she had, I think they inserted some kind of metal plate into her wrist, and that ended up causing further complications around about her elbow area. And it was just one of those situations where, you know, something that was meant to solve something ended up creating another problem and just making the whole situation even worse. So amazing that she's back. She beat Karolina Mukova today, 20th seed. And
wow, that's a good win, isn't it?
It's a really good win, and she played really well. She's such a clean ball striker and can go toe-to-toe with these players, even though there's kind of nothing of her. She's really slight. Yeah, good player to watch, and now plays Elise Mertens, who just beat Heather Watson.
Well, welcome back, Cece Bellis, and let's hope there are good times ahead. Incidentally, this can't be right. It appears that taking to court number 3 at the moment is Leighton Hewitt. It's 12:37 a.m. That can't be right, can it?
I did say to Matt earlier, did Hewitt play his doubles today? And Matt said, no, it must have been cancelled because it's not on the schedule. There is a suspicious-looking feed of a court. I mean, Svitolina and Lauren Davis are still playing.
Yeah.
Tennis is happening. Okay. Svitolina's a set up.
Anything else from today before we talk tomorrow?
I think we should probably mention the weather.
Oh, my goodness, the weather. Yeah, well, you may remember last night we were talking about the muddy rain. And what we meant was, when Matt and I were walking in it, the puddles in front of us were turning orange. And when we woke up this morning, the entire River Yarra was orange.
It was extraordinary.
I've never seen anything like that before.
And they had to delay the start of play to hose down, to power hose the courts to remove the red silts. Deposit, whatever it was. Apparently, it's really, really good news for the region because it's cleared the whatever is now in the Yarra is no longer in the sky, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
But they were pretty arresting images.
Mm. It looked like Roland Garros around here. You know, if you walk around Roland Garros, you get deposits of clay everywhere, you know, red, orange stuff, and it was like that everywhere here as well, on court, in all the sort of gutters. It was really something.
So tomorrow we have Ash Barty against Elena
Rybakina.
Rybakina. Okay, that's an interesting one because she's had some results recently. Ash Barty first up, then Serena Williams against Wang Qiang of China, and Novak Djokovic against Yoshihito Nishioka in the afternoon session.
Which we've decided you need to go for, David.
I will go for what I want.
You're in go big or go home territory now.
Oh, great. It's going so well, so I might as well, eh? And then Naomi Osaka against Coco Gauff.
That's the one. She won in doubles today, Gauff, with McNally.
Did she?
I love that she's committed to playing doubles.
Do you think she's going to get closer than she did at the US Open?
Yes.
I believe closer, but I don't think she'll win. But I think she only got four games in New York, but I could see her doubling that.
Agreed.
And then John Millman against Roger Federer. Repeat? Did we talk about that last night? I think we did.
John Millman, who one of the Australian radio journalists described earlier as a sensation.
He is a sensation.
No,
is
I think he? If you told John Millman that, he would laugh.
Yeah.
Say no, mate.
Yes, I agree with you. Diego Schwartzman against Dusan Lajovic. Madison Keys against Maria Sakkari. That's a good one. Over on the Margaret Court Arena.
I think I've picked that for an upset.
I don't know about that, but it's going to be good. Tsitsipas against Raonic. Blimey neck.
Yes. Tsitsipas.
That's a tough draw, isn't it, for Tsitsipas? Well,
especially considering he didn't play his second round. So he's not played for, what is it, 4 days? Raonic not dropped a set.
I didn't
like the thought of Tsitsipas having an idle 4 days.
No.
For his sake, I don't like the sound of that matchup at all. Raonic is the sort of player who could take him out. Zhang Shuai.
Sounds like your prediction's been made, David. Yeah.
Zhang Shuai against Sofia Kenin. Onshaber against Caroline Wozniacki. Good day tomorrow.
On the
isn't
Melbourne
it?
Arena, and I think I just backed Wozniacki in that, but there's a real risk there that Wozniacki's career could end on the Melbourne Arena. That's a big call to put that match out there.
Well, Andy Murray's nearly did. So it's not the worst place.
No, I don't necessarily think it's the wrong call. It's just a big call. Yeah. The easier call would have been to say, gosh, we've just got to pop Wozniacki on Margaret Court or Rod Laver.
I'm sure we were talking about Andy Murray like this last year, weren't we?
But he asked for Hisense.
I know he did.
Although it's not
Hisense. I'll start calling it the Vodafone Arena, which is what it was in 2003.
I'd be surprised if Wozniacki requested the Vodafone Arena.
Yeah. Marin Cilic, Roberto Bautista, Guido Pella against Fabio Fognini. God, there's so many matches tomorrow.
Yeah, round three. I think because we've not really had any massive shocks yet in either draw, round three means that most of the top players are still in, and that's when the seeds can first meet. And just looking at the lineup, it's really strong for the next 2 days.
Sure is. Also, just wanted to say that we received news in the last 24 hours, some very sad news from Esther Vergeer, the incredible wheelchair player who had the most extraordinary winning run over several years. She was undefeated, and she retired a few years ago, 38 years of age. She's involved in the Rotterdam tournament, does loads of work, and she's tweeted today that she's been diagnosed with breast cancer, and so she's having treatment for that. And just wanted to wish her well. It's a tough thing to go through, of course, and we wish her the very best. Right then, so tomorrow we'll be back. We have been brought to you by our mascot Crumble from the Australian Open. We've been having some Crumble action today, haven't we?
Content has peaked today.
Yes. And we've also had Butler.
There's like a content off between Butler and Crumble.
Butler was wearing Grigor Dimitrov's outfit today.
Amazing. Russell and Brad, shout out to
Russell
and Brad, who sent us pictures of Butler wearing... wearing
the novelty ski suit
jacket, and we put them side by side, and you know who wore it better, and
it's pretty unanimous.
It's pretty unanimous, yeah.
Grigor can't catch a break, can he? They're our mascots, and we have also got a couple of shout outs, haven't we, Matt?
We have to Stephen Lewis.
Good man.
Thank you
Stephen.
Very much, Stephen.
Cheers, Stephen.
To Andres Alonso.
Good one, Alonso. Andrew.
Andres.
This is going
Andres.
Well.
Andres. Does that one not live with you?
Andres. How you doing?
And finally to Yolanda Barron.
Thank you, Yolanda. Oh, fantastic. Yeah, all backed us in our Kickstarter, which have enabled Catherine and Matt to be here around this table, drinking beer and talking tennis here on the Tennis Podcast, which is what we are here to do every single day. Why is there a mouse running across the floor over there?
There's not.
Yes, there is. And
oh, my God.
Yes. That's a development I wasn't expecting as we closed the show.
They have a... Oh, my word.
Where?
It's going up the wall.
They have a hygiene situation.
Okay.
Where?
This is where the food is made and consumed.
We'll go and alert the authorities, folks, and bring you another Tennis Podcast tomorrow. See you then. Let's hope we are still okay. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.